This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the long talked about spring offensive, which has now become a summer offensive by Ukraine and the Ukrainian army against the invaders from Russia, has begun. It was, of course, to some extent delayed by weather conditions, but also there's a large force at the heart of it, 50,000 Ukrainian troops armed and trained by NATO with new weapons and well supplied. There is a confidence in Ukraine that they can push the Russians back and regain territory that was lost in the first phase of this war. Morale appears to be very high. Unfortunately, overnight, there was an incident. The Novokakhovka Dam, which is a very important piece of infrastructure close to the city of Kherson, which is now in Ukrainian hands. The Russians appear to be guilty of blowing this dam up, bombing it. They are blaming Ukraine, but that's nonsense, it would seem, because it is Ukraine that would be affected and the people in Kherson and many other places. It's a very serious piece of terrorism, really, and it's breaking news as we record this now. And we're joined by Senator Tom Clonan. Tom is a military expert, of course, a former commanding officer with the Irish troops in the Lebanon, among other places, where he witnessed how horrible a war and conflict can be, including witnessing a massacre of refugees at the village of Kana in April 1996. Tom has written two books, both of them very important books, and he also was a whistleblower who exposed bullying and sexual harassment in the armed forces, and that has resulted in justice for many people who were victims of it. So it's a pleasure to welcome Senator Clonan to discuss where we might be going with this conflict. Tom, thank you very much for joining us. Can I ask you first about the breaking news of the dam, the Novokakhovka Dam, which is very important and very big, and which will now, as we speak, is flooding the region of Kherson. It's a Russian-controlled part of Ukraine where this dam was sited, and it's a Ukrainian city that will be damaged.
Yeah, so this will flood the parts of the Dnipro Delta.
Yes.
And this is an area to the south and east of Kherson that the Russian Federation have increased their defenses, or have consolidated their defenses, because they rather expect a thrust down towards Melitopol to cut off the land corridor from Russia proper to the Crimea. So Putin and General Shoigu has concentrated some of his forces in this area. And I think this is where they most expect, if you like, where the center of gravity of Ukraine's counteroffensive will be, in that it is something that that Zelensky could conceivably achieve, which would be to rob Putin of this so-called victory of a land corridor, which has been his only kind of tangible, if you want to use the word, positive outcome of his 10-day special operation, which has now turned into a, you know, I think we're at about 475, or we're pushing on towards 500 days now. So I again, we don't know who blew the dam or how it happened, but given its location and given the nature of it and given the, you know, the outcomes and how it shapes the battlefield, it does benefit Putin and his generals more so than it would, or it might, Zelensky.
And it also threatens the Zaporizhzhia nuclear facility, the biggest one in Europe. Now, fortunately, that facility is not active at the moment. But nevertheless, this was a terrorist act of enormous irresponsibility, almost desperation, you might say.
Yeah, and this dam is 3 kilometers wide, and I think it's 30 meters high. But it's not the only reservoir that's available to Zaporizhzhia. So, and it wasn't completely destroyed. So I think what it does is it did enough to achieve what Putin might want in the short term, in terms of, I suppose, denying a certain amount of ground to the Ukrainians. I mean, it certainly wouldn't stop them getting into that delta, but it does, you know, narrow the options for them if a large part of it is flooded. Which doesn't lend itself to the use of armored fighting vehicles or tracked vehicles like the main battle tanks that they've acquired. But the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, which does use water for as part of its cooling system, it doesn't directly impact on it, but it does hint. There's a sort of it does contain a message there that
yes,
if sufficiently provoked, or if there are operations in the Zaporizhzhia Kherson area that, you know, this could lead to further interference with the critical infrastructure, which has been a hallmark of Putin's intervention in Ukraine since the outset. They've targeted rail, road, power, and any bit of critical infrastructure that they can get. They've been trying to destroy it.
How important are the next 2 or 3 months to the outcome of this conflict, Tom? And how important to this effort are the tanks, weapons, missiles, and support that the West has given to Ukraine, including the training of these troops? There are said to be 50,000 at the heart of it. How important is this next 2 months?
Well, this is a critical phase, and Zelensky's counteroffensive has, you know, it has been flagged for some time now, and it was expected to take place in the spring, but the 1st of June signals the beginning of summer in continental European terms. So it's coming, I suppose, a little later in the day. So there's huge expectation and weight of expectation now placed politically on what happens in the next couple of weeks, because the outcome of whatever counteroffensive reveals itself in the coming weeks, the outcomes, if it's successful or can be deemed to be successful, whatever success looks like, I think will shape the ongoing support of, you know, NATO and the European Union and the United States by extension.
Yes.
So strategically, we're in an extraordinary period just at the moment, Eamon. Like, this is a 21st century conflict, and there is the full spectrum of deception, psychological operations and propaganda underway, but principally deception. And in this regard, the Ukrainians are borrowing from the Russian philosophy of Maskarovka, of, you know, concealing and by means of deception, not revealing your hand on the ground. And that's a full, like, we had a broadcast in Russia on Mir state television and radio over the weekend, where a deep fake broadcast of President Putin asking people to evacuate and move into central Russia for safety, announcing a mass mobilization of men in Voronezh and Belgorod in advance of a Ukrainian invasion, Now, that it took the Russian authorities quite a period of time to actually interrupt that hack of the state system. So you have that. You had drone strikes in Moscow. You had incursions into a place called Shevchino in Belgorod province in Russia proper by the Russian Volunteer Corps or the Russian Freedom Legion. And for the last number of weeks, we've had the more conventional intervention of the use of Storm Shadow missiles to launch long-range missile attacks deep into Russian-held territory that have been really targeting troop concentrations, Russian troop concentrations, command and control, or C2, sort of headquarters formations and logistics, you know, fuel, oil, you know, any ammunition dumps. So this is all of these things together from, you know, from the PSYOPs or the psychological operations. You know, some of our listeners may have seen the TikTok videos and digital media
platforms.
Yeah,
we saw a video, a very strange video last night. All the television stations showed it of Ukrainian soldiers putting their hands to their lips and going, shh.
Yeah.
In other words, say nothing. It was kind of surreal. It was kind of meant, I suppose, to be amusing. But it did seem strange in the tragic circumstances that we're looking at.
This is designed it's what our British friends called achieving a moral victory, which is basically instilling fear in and amongst the enemy. In this case, you know, whatever troops have been deployed to Ukraine now to meet this offensive. So we're at that deception, and it's a full spectrum deception plan. And we're in the preamble. We're in this point where the Ukrainians are trying to shape the battlefield. They're trying to, a number of probing attacks have taken place in the last 48 hours. And there have been some successes in and around the Bakhmut area. So according to Prigozhin, the leader of the Wagner group, he's admitted on his Telegram channel that the Ukrainian forces have taken a small settlement called Berkhivka, just south of Bakhmut, and that they've moved towards Kishkivka, Kurdimivka, and these are all names, you know, we haven't heard before, but they represent the high ground around Bakhmut, and another location called Paraskovivka. So if you kind of drill down from all the noise and the fury of the propaganda to, you know, locations that through geolocation and independent verification can be said to be a focus of combat at the moment. I think what we're seeing is a probing attack in and around Bakhmut. And that could be a feint, you know, it could be a way of trying to draw some of Putin's resources back into that area, which would be associated with very, very low morale amongst Russian troops.
Yes, and Prigozhin had lashed out at Putin and at the Russian soldiers in the last 48 hours. I mean, he was contemptuous. Now, we must make it clear that he is really a mercenary. He does it for money. The Wagner group, they are people, many of them, let out of prison to fight, maybe used as cannon fodder. But there does appear to be, on the Russian side of things, Tom, and perhaps you could explain this to us, there does appear to be not a unity of purpose and criticism, severe criticism of the troops and by implication of their leaders and indeed even of Putin himself.
Yes, Prigozhin has been explicitly critical of particularly Putin's defense minister, General Shoigu, who is now in and of himself, he has started to raise his own militia, even though groups like the Wagner group and Shoigu's new militia, they're actually illegal in Russia, but they're building them up. And there's a suggestion that Shoigu could be seen potentially as a successor to Putin. If the coming weeks lead to a major embarrassment or setback for the Russian special operation in Donbass, as they call it.
Yes.
So if Zelensky's forces can achieve some sort of a spectacular, whatever that might look like, you know, that will put Putin under considerable pressure. And the fact that people like Prigozhin and others are speaking openly and critical of the military operation is, you know, it's very, very telling. And
there are also, sorry to interrupt you, Tom, I really am. There are also a number, a growing number of Russian private armies. For example, Gazprom now have their own private army. They sponsor the Champions League, Tom.
I know.
No, I mean, it's. I'm laughing because it's, but it's not funny.
Yeah,
but it's weird.
Yeah, but you see, this is a tipping point, not just on the ground in Ukraine, but I think also the pressure in the Kremlin and in Moscow is now reaching an intensity that I think Putin will be very, very cognizant of that. And they'll be,
yeah.
These guys, these hard men, we've said this before, they seem to have an unassailable grip on authority. And but when they unravel, you know, yes, whether it's Gaddafi or Ceausescu or others, you know, when they unravel very, very quickly.
Yes, you've said that, you've made that point repeatedly, and it's borne out by what we're witnessing to some extent.
But to get back to what's happening on the ground, I mean, I think based on the initial reports, you know, there's a 1,000 kilometer front in Ukraine from, you know, Odessa in the southwest right up to Svatove in the northeast. And there are these probing attacks in and around Bakhmut, as we've seen. And I think that my own personal view of that is that the Ukrainians obviously they have troops in situ there because they've been fighting this incredible battle for the last month. So they actually have a force in place there. They're using them to launch those probing attacks in and around the high ground, as I was mentioning there earlier on. But there's another set of attacks that I think are much more interesting, down around Donetsk itself. So
yes,
the Russians have admitted that, at a place called Velkia Novosilka, and particularly a little settlement called Novodonetsk, 10 kilometers southeast of Donetsk, the Russian-appointed governor of Donetsk has admitted that Russian forces were taken by surprise there, and that ground has been taken, and that the Ukrainian forces have moved forward as much as 2 kilometers in the last day or two. Now, that is south and west of Bakhmut. And that is, I think, more likely to be an axis of advance for the Ukrainians down towards Melitopol and Berdyansk to try and cut off this land corridor. So that, you know, I think nobody really knows what's going to happen next. And I was amused by Oleksiy Reznikov. This is Zelensky's defense minister, who quoted Depeche Mode's song, Enjoyed the Silence, when pressed upon, you know, where will the main attack take place. So it's all propaganda and psychological operations. But again, if you look at the tools that the Ukrainians have at their disposal, that to some extent reveals what they might or might not be able to achieve. So as you were saying, they have admitted that they have raised a force of approximately 50,000 troops. So all of the international sources and the defense and intelligence community all say the same thing, that he has assembled a force of approximately 12 brigades. These are armored fighting vehicles or mechanized brigades or tank brigades. Three of them are old, you know, would have the original kind of Ukrainian equipment, T-72 tanks and so on. But 9 brigades have been equipped with the NATO standard equipment. For example, the UK Challenger tanks.
And the Leopard tanks from Germany.
That they have up to about 230 of these, that they have 1,500 armored fighting vehicles, and that these 9 brigades have been trained by NATO. And the idea is that this would be the equivalent of kind of like 3 assault divisions. So everything in the military comes in threes. There are 3 sections in a platoon, 3 platoons in a company, 3 companies in a battalion, and so on and so forth, roughly speaking. So these 9 NATO-trained brigades, the idea is that you would have 2 in the assault phase and 1 held back to either plug a gap or go in and exploit a weakness in Russian defenses. And when that force is mobilized, we're going to know all about it. So right. It hasn't happened yet, but when that does happen, and it will, wherever they assert themselves along that 1,000 kilometer front, we're going to know all about it. But it's going to be, in my view, it'll be a very rapid moving engagement, not unlike the one last September when they had the breakout of Kharkiv and into Kharkiv province, where they regained thousands of square kilometers of territory in a very, very short time. My feeling is that it's a bit like, if you're any students of history, the Schlieffen von Moltke plan, they're not going to go up against Russian defenses full on, in a full frontal assault, or like the Americans when they invaded Iraq. They're going to go around the prepared defenses. Yes. That would be my best guess, because that's what, you know, the art of war has taught us in the last century, that you don't expand your forces by doing a full frontal assault on prepared defenses. So they're going to find the weak point, get in behind, and I think they're going to try to do is cut the land corridor. And that may involve cutting off or getting in behind thousands and thousands of Russian troops and isolating them.
Yes.
And I think that's the point at which they would hope to try and get Putin to some sort of a negotiating position to get his people back. And you know, it's all speculation in the fog of war.
Yes.
But if you look at the toolkit that the Ukrainians have, this is probably what they can achieve. And in terms of the rapid movement, those Leopard tanks, of which they have, you know, hundreds, they have a speed on open ground of 40 miles an hour, 72 kilometers per hour, and a range of up to 500 kilometers. So they can move very, very quickly. They can outgun and outmaneuver the best of the Russian armor that's in place. And they really have been shaping the battlefield. I read with interest that on the 3rd of June, for example, just over the bank holiday weekend, where we were enjoying the sunshine here in Ireland, Ukrainian long-range artillery destroyed 32 Russian heavy artillery positions across the front.
Yes.
I mean, to me, and I am actually a retired artillery officer, that's what you do. That's, you start taking out their capacity to deny ground, their capacity to determine or dictate what happens on the battlefield. They're softening it up for a major armored advance. And when it happens, I think it'll be very dramatic. It'll be very rapid. It's anyone's guess as to where it might happen. But as I said, my feeling is it'll be, they might outflank and go down through Zaporizhia towards Melitopol or some point south of that on the coast to try and cut off. And that may end up encircling tens of thousands of Russian troops in Kherson Oblast and in Zaporizhia Oblast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
To some extent, time is against Ukraine in that, I mean, tanks, for example, they need the summer ground to move. They can't move in winter, autumn when the weather gets bad. I think that there are also other time pressures, the American election, for example, and what view a Trump administration or indeed the DeSantis administration would say. So in a year's time, we'd be looking at a vastly different world picture, won't we, Tom? And does that impose, in your view, real pressure on Ukraine, or do they have the 17 months before the next presidential election in November 2024?
I think the Ukrainians have 4 months here.
Right.
They've got June, July, August, and September to make a meaningful impact, because the Russian effort in and around Bakhmut was like World War I. Up to 50,000 Russian and Wagner troops killed in action. Yes. In and around Bakhmut for very, very little by way of, gaining ground. They may have advanced a couple of kilometers since, and much of that has been retaken in the last 72 hours. So what has to happen now is that there has to be a very mobile, very dramatic, combined arms operation that is kinetic and very, very dynamic. And if you like, represents the opposite of what the Russians have been able to achieve in Donbass. And again, the concentration, I would imagine, will be on Zaporizhia and Kherson. And I think that's probably why the Russians have begun to flood that delta. Donetsk and Luhansk, they already have a high concentration of people who identify as Russian and yes. voted in those so-called plebiscites. So the focus of attention, I think, will be in Kherson and Zaporizhia, but could be wrong. Something could happen up further north in Kharkiv towards the border. But I think to maintain the support of NATO and the European Union, they won't be encroaching directly or threatening directly the Russian border or Russian territory. So for all of the reasons I set out, the toolkit that they have available to them, the time and space available, about 4 months, and the kind of the broader political considerations, I think we're going to see a center of gravity somewhere down in that Zaporizhia, Kherson, on the border of those two oblasts, an axis of advance heading south and east towards the Sea of Azov.
Just two more questions, Tom. One is about the morale of the fighters, the troops. Is it wrong to assume, or right to assume, that the impression we have that the Ukraine forces are committed and ready with high morale and belief against Russian forces that aren't really, many of them conscripts, some of them, unfortunately, tragically, really, cannon fodder, as they've been described by their own leaders, even, and not very good. Can that be a determining factor in these 4 months to come?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, morale is and the motivation to fight.
Yes.
Is a key index of performance and what's going to happen on the battlefield. The force that has been assembled, particularly the 9 brigades trained by NATO, haven't been in the line. So they will be fresh and they'll be, new to the battlefield, whereas the Russian troops ranged before them have been in situ for quite some considerable time. And because of Putin's partial mobilization last autumn, this is a kind of a small pool of troops. I think he mobilized approximately 300,000 people.
Yes.
Who have appeared on the battlefield. But, they haven't been rotated. They haven't been relieved. They're sitting there, they're waiting. They don't have the initiative. So the Ukrainians have the motivation, the morale, the will to fight because they're, they're expelling an invasion force, an aggressor from their home territory. But they also have, critically, the support of the United States, NATO, and, you know, satellite imaging, all of those critical infrastructure targets that the Ukrainians have been hitting out at, like to take out 32 artillery pieces in one day on the 3rd of June, you know, that's not as a result of reconnaissance and good artillery spotting on the ground. That's as a result of very, very detailed intelligence, very precise coordinates obtained by what the United States refer to as national technical means or satellite technology to assist. So, you know, the Ukrainians have, they will take the initiative. That'll give them some momentum and some traction, whereas the Russians have to defend. Now, traditionally in warfare, the people who are on the offensive will lose more people in the what they call the exchange ratio. They tend to suffer more casualties. But if they can move very, very rapidly, which they have done before, and which the Russians have shown they're not capable of doing, then they could outflank very, very large numbers of Russian troops, and we could see a dramatic reversal or a dramatic rout. I mean, even Prigozhin was quoted in relation to that settlement of Berkivka being captured. You know, in his comments on that, he says that the Russian defenders quietly ran away.
Yes.
And this has been a feature. You know, we've seen troops routed, and we know that because there weren't counterattacks and is a slow advance. You know, when you have a very, very rapid advance like that and there's no meaningful resistance, it means that the enemy has been routed because they have had fixed positions and fixed artillery support and air support from, you know, assets close inside the Russian territory itself. When you liberate large areas of that kind of territory, it's a sign of a lack of a capacity to respond meaningfully. And that's, you know, this inability to respond meaningfully on the ground finds expression in the wave upon wave of drone and missile assaults on places like Kiev and Dnipro and Odessa in recent weeks. You know, it's a sign of, I think, impotence on the part of the Russian military. They can't change the facts on the ground, so they're targeting civilians in cities and built-up areas.
A very final question. The blowing up this Kharkova dam overnight, will that make a significant enough difference to what's going to happen?
No, I don't think so. But it is symptomatic, though, of, you know, this period we're in now of full spectrum interference, deception, probing, trying to establish weak points in the Russian defenses. And I think that on the balance of probabilities, if Zelensky is lucky, there is the potential here for Ukraine to inflict a dramatic, if you like, about turn on. I think that there is within the bounds of probability the possibility for the Russians, for the Ukrainians to achieve a spectacular success in those received terms. But it will come with loss, a huge loss of life. But I think that they have nothing to lose now. They have to go for it in the next couple of months, because what happens on the ground in the next few weeks is going to determine what's going to happen in the next year and a half. And then, you know, the broader questions of what happens if there is a negotiation, if there isn't a negotiation, if Putin's grip on power is loosened. Like at the moment, the Russians don't have troops in places, you know, along the border with Azerbaijan. They've taken all their troops out from places like North Ossetia and South Ossetia. If there is a Ukrainian victory, will it embolden other parts of the Russian Federation to challenge Kremlin hegemony? And could we see an unraveling of the Russian Federation in a manner not dissimilar to what we saw in the former Yugoslavia? And faced with that prospect, could you get a hardliner who succeeds Putin, who would announce a national mobilization of all Russian troops? you know, the short to medium to long term implications of what's happening will be determined what happens in the ground in June, July and August.
Okay, Tom. Senator Tom Cronin, we're very grateful to you as always. Thank you very much for joining us on the stand. That's Tom, and we're very, very grateful to him for guiding us through this conflict. We're grateful to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.